and welcome. This is Trials and Tribulations. I'm Phil Airy, and I've got my two cohorts.
Sarah Owen Hughes.
And me, Faith Douglas.
So my very first guest today is a friend of mine. I think we've known each other for maybe eight, nine years, something like that. So Richard is a specialist horticulturist. He's moved from research through teaching, and he now runs his own micropropagation laboratory. He organises specialist teaching sessions in schools and for groups, and he also sells introductory microprop kits online, as well as preserving and conserving plant material for private growers, breeders, researchers, and natural collections. So please put your hands together and give a very warm welcome to Richard Fenwick from Plant Look Culture, our micropropagator.
Well, thank you very much for your introduction.
It's lovely to see you. I've not seen you for about a year now, isn't it?
Yeah, it has been a little bit of time, yes.
Yeah, it's been a difficult time. So I think, first of all, what I'd like to know is, tell us a little bit, first of all, how you got into horticulture, because that's always the interesting story, isn't it?
From school, really. Went to Askham Ryan, did a few courses, did various work experience, and finally hit on a niche in horticulture which I really enjoyed, which was micropropagation, and it all grew from there, really. So I've worked in the industry 20 plus years doing various roles, and now we're back, yes, doing the microprop. I launched the lab of my own September last year in Beverley. So
the next question, obviously, is what on earth is micropropagation? But before we get there, I just want to make sure that people understand what propagation is, because there are two different forms of propagation. So can you explain what that is?
Okay, so the two main ones is growing plants from seed, or growing plants from softwood cuttings or Serbian ripe cuttings. They're your traditional propagation methods, or division if you're talking perennials. But they're the sort of norms which you normally come across, and people do at home or commercially.
So that they are either sexual reproduction, which is from seed, where two plants have pollinated each other, or vegetative, where you take a part of a plant and grow it on.
Yes.
So what you're doing is vegetative,
mostly, yes. Yep.
But what makes it micropropagation?
The plants are a lot smaller. they dwarf down. But they're also clones. They're all clones of each other. So if you have the characteristics and the traits of the plants that you're interested in, you can keep those traits. So I brought one of the examples here. This is Daphne odora marginata, quite a rare species.
Yeah.
It has a very nice fine variegation to the leaf. They're the traits that we'll want to try and keep in culture. So that's one of the examples.
So you take a tiny part, so the meristem, which is the tip,
yes,
of that,
yeah,
plant.
You can go down to the meristem, single cell, two or three cells. If you're looking at virus removal, that's where you go for that material, because the plant, the growing tip, is actually growing quicker than the virus can invade those plant cells. So a good example would be saving banana species.
Yeah.
About 20 years ago, they found that bananas had viruses, and that's how they got the cultures clean, by going through a meristem.
Yeah, yep. Because when you grow them in, we'll talk about the media in a minute,
yes,
when you grow them in a soilless environment, they can grow faster, they can reproduce faster,
yes,
than they would naturally. So they actually grow faster than the virus, so
yes,
you end up with clean plant material. And you can then grow on,
yes,
parent, yep, plants from that.
Yes, yep, yeah. So these are on a four-week cycle, so they'll double every 4 weeks.
Wow.
So we'll change the gel, we'll chop them up, and I like to see at least double or treble the number. We've got about between 15 and 20 plants in this pot, and to give you an example of a scale-up, within a year, that could be 1,000 pots from one pot.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And you don't grow in any soil or compost or peat
at all? Not at this stage. And there's no roots. We can also pan this round if people would like to have a look. But there's no roots. It's just stems, leaves, and callus. And callus is a group of cells which, under different environmental or chemical conditions, can be made into a stem or a root. But right. There's no roots. What I've done is I've changed the recipe of gel in this one, and we are starting to get roots.
You get some roots forming. Right.
So that one's in multiplication gel, and then we finish it off with the complete plant. So, yeah.
So the gel is agar-based?
It's agar-based, but that is purely just to give it some stable, it somewhere to prop itself up and grow. We then add fertilizer, plant hormones, so cytokines and auxins, and that will tell the plant how to put stems on, how to grow in a certain way. We then supplement with sucrose, because these are growing inside under artificial lights, so they need a little bit of a help, a little bit of an additional food source. We balance the pH, and then that is everything they need while they're in there for 4 weeks.
You make it sound really, really simple, but it really, really isn't. It's extremely complex. You are an absolute specialist, and you spent 20 years developing your different recipes for each of your plants, haven't you?
I have, yeah. Each individual plant needs its own recipe, and we need one recipe for multiplication, and then we need a separate recipe for rooting. So they can take many years to develop. And if you don't mind passing me the oak tree, thank you. But the oak tree, that's been in there a year, and I was looking at more germination, trying to get germination quicker. We got it to 10 days, which we were very pleased with.
Wow.
But with this one, I messed around with the cytokine levels, and we've actually got a triple, maybe even five growing points now. So we've kind of bonsaied it. And at some point, that will go out in the garden. But it should remain the five or six growing points.
And the pink, I take it, is a colour, isn't it?
For the educational test tubes we sell, I just add food dye. I find the students like to pick their favourite colour. But it doesn't transfer into the plants, and it just adds a bit of fun. But it has no relevance to the actual how a plant grows.
Right, okay. Obviously, the sort of the next question, because this is such a specialised and specialist form of propagation, why is micropropagation so important? Because you have lots of applications for it, don't you?
We do. And we touched on one earlier with a banana. When they found the virus, they predicted about 20 years, so roughly now, if they did nothing, we wouldn't have bananas as a fruit, or they would be very expensive, like £10 a banana. So for us, it's a piece of fruit in the UK, but in other countries, it's a commercial crop. It's one of their staple diets. So it's very key to work on that. We work on endangered species as well. So any people who love gin, if we don't save juniper, you don't have gin anymore.
So, I'm holding on to the arm of my seat now. This is causing all sorts of anxieties for me.
So this year, we're hoping to team up with York Gin and do a project with them. So we have some clean material of juniper.
What's happening to juniper plants?
It's getting the fungus disease, which they're not quite sure which fungus is attacking, and that's always part of the problem. How do you save something where you're not quite sure why they're dying off? But if we can get clean material and get it in the lab, then we can save it. Yeah. So on the endangered side, that's one of our main projects. And then if anyone knows Blarney Castle in Southern Ireland, we're working on one of their rhododendrons, which was bred for them about 20 years ago. They believe it's the only one in the world, and they're concerned if it gets a pest, a disease, or another tree falls on it, they'll lose it. Mm. So rhododendron Blarney Castle is another little side project which we're going to work on and try and save. The other end of our business is commercial, so we work for people who have new plant varieties, who want to launch them to flower shows. Mm-hmm. So in the lab at the moment, I have plants which some are unnamed, and I am the only person in the UK at the moment who've got those plant varieties. So
you're trying to bulk them up and make more of them,
yes,
in a very small space as well, and that's part of the joy of micropropagation, isn't it?
It's one of the big advantages, you know. That would normally take up one pot, wouldn't it?
Yes.
One plant, one pot.
It'd be here, wouldn't it?
And I've got 20 in that one. It's a great way of being space efficient, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you do a huge amount of work as a STEM ambassador as well, don't you? You do a lot of work with schools and outreach. So how do you make plants interesting for children, young teens, young adults?
For younger students, we show them how to grow a plant in a test tube. So we're often invited into schools and colleges, and each student has their own test tube. We do a little experiment with them, takes about half an hour, and then we leave them with the tube. And normally, depending on room temperature, it takes 48 hours to germinate, and that's been in there about 10 days. So it keeps their interest. And then, of course, you can then plant that out. The jelly is biodegradable, so there's that progression to see the plant growing outside. And that's a garden pea. So, and we find the colours help attract them to the activity. We've just been here about 3 weeks ago doing Springtime Live, so we used about 500 tubes, and we get invited to things like Yorkshire Show. So, yeah.
And you were at Wisley a few weeks ago as well, or your kits were at Wisley?
Oh, yeah, but Wisley used 2,000 of our kits for half term. And I was at Harlow Car that week doing the demonstration. So, yeah. So we try and split the business between education and the commercial side.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's how we're going to get people into plant science in particular. Plant science has always been seen as being a little bit less exciting than human and animal science. And obviously, we're both on the plant science side. We both disagree fundamentally with that concept. But it's about exciting people's curiosity and giving them an instant effect as well.
It is, yeah, and that's why we develop the kits. It's very difficult to take students into a lab. It's a very sterile environment, so bringing lots of people through is not the best idea. But how do you then engage young people and students if you can't really show them what you do? So going, taking the kits is one way of introducing them. Bringing pots to the classroom and sort of showing them that way is one way of overcoming that problem. So yeah,
and I think as well, now that they've just announced that there's going to be a natural history GCSE, haven't they, which is coming out in the next 3 or 4 years, that's going to be really exciting for us to actually get the message across that in terms of plant conservation, whether it's a rhododendron over in Ireland or whether it's juniper or actually things like moss on peat land, they've done a huge amount of work micropropagating moss, and they micro seed it and send it across mosslands, peatlands, to try and regenerate them. There's a huge message here that we can do this using science quickly, easily, safely, cleanly.
Yes.
Cleanly, without pests and diseases, without viruses, and we can produce a huge amount of plants.
Yes.
Relatively quickly, if you've got the specialist knowledge, and that's the bit that's hard to get.
If you know what you're doing, yes, it takes years to sort of develop the recipes. I've been very lucky. I was at Askren Bryan, and they had the labs running, and we did some work there, and we built up the knowledge over those years. So, yeah.
Fantastic, Richard. And so where do you think micropropagation is going? Do you think there's going to be a sort of a resurgence? Because certainly in the 80s, it was a really big, exciting part of horticulture, and now I feel that it's coming back again, but I could be biased because I know you and we talk about it a lot.
I suppose one of the common questions I get from the students is, oh, well, could we grow plants in space this way?
Yes.
And the answer is certainly, you know, having them in test tubes and, you know, firing them up on rockets. But really, if you're looking for food production, you want to be doing hydroponics because that's full-size plants, whereas we're dwarfing them down. So I can certainly see how we could get plants into space this way and fulfil that role. I think bringing new plants to market in a more cost-effective way, in a more time-efficient way, is the way the market is going. In the UK, there's not many microbot labs. A lot of people I work with in Canada, the US, and those labs are doing some very, very interesting work. Yeah.
Fantastic. Richard, that has been just the best start to my flower show. Thank you so much. I always love talking to you because it is so interesting.
Well, thank you.
And will you please come back in maybe 3 or 4 years' time and I can interview you as our first ever space gardener.
Oh, there we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Fenwick from Plantlet Culture.
Thank you. There's a plant in a test tube if you would like one. They're at the front. Help yourselves.
Help yourselves and enjoy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. That's been another edition of Trials and Tribulations. Now, if you liked it, please subscribe and follow. But until next time, keep it green.